This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the second installment of the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Making the Cut series. That is a long run-on sentence, but I'm JT, joining you here tonight in the PTBN studios alongside my friend from north of the border, my partner in the Shield. Is that where we are? I forget. Whatever we went with last time. And that is, of course, Aaron George. Aaron, how are you?
Making the cut. Making the cut.
I like the person who asked, what's the difference between making the cut and for your consideration? And like, different people. That is only difference.
That's all it is. Different team names.
Different hosts. Anyway, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
Delightful. I love spending Saturday nights with you. It's fun.
Yeah.
Or is it Friday? Oh, fuck.
Even when we do it on a Friday, you make every night feel like Saturday.
Right? Well, Saturday night's usually our date night, so we'll go with it, though. It's a weekend. So happy Friday night, and here we are, talking wrestling. What's better? And if you were with us in the first episode, which you should have been, and if you weren't, go check it out. We, on this show here, take four guys and four candidates that were nominated for the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Project, and we talk about them. We fit them within the framework of the NJPW system, nuance, jump up, promo, skills, and character work, and work rate. And we kind of just give a directional idea of where we think they'll be ranked. Again, we'll, you know, decide if they're going to make the cut. Some of the guys we talk about are locks for the list. Some maybe fringe worthy. Can I create a word right there?
So we'll
break it down. We'll talk about it. And we try to pick, you know, a couple of main event level guys and then a couple of other kind of mid-tier guys to talk about here. So last episode, we did Goldberg, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, and who am I forgetting?
Edge, the forgettable Edge.
How could I forget? yes, Edge. And we have a new batch of four tonight. And why don't we kick things off, Aaron, by kicking those walls in, breaking those walls down.
Oh!
See, I told you I'd do it. And that is Chris Jericho is going to be our leadoff man tonight. He's a guy that when I was like mentally going through this list, and as I mentioned last time, I'm just starting kind of the framework of organizing my list now. And Jericho's a guy I assume is like a lock for a top 15, maybe top 10. That's where I kind of envision him being. And he's like a sneaky kind of guy in my mind. But where did you kind of have him at first glance? And then we'll go through his criterion.
I completely forgot about him.
Really?
Like, yeah, like, and I mean, it's funny because like around 97, 98, I was a huge Chris Jericho mark. Like, I loved everything about the guy. And when I was originally making the list, it was like, I was putting my top 20 or so together, top 30. And then it hit me like, oh shit, Jericho, mm-hmm. Where does he go? And he ended up like so far, he's pretty much where you have him. Like he's now when I look at him at a glance, he's in the mid-pack of what I'd call the second tier
right.
of guys.
So what's that?
Oh, I got him at 16.
Okay. So yeah, second tier is what, 10 to 20-ish then?
Yeah, like for instance, like at 15 I have The Undertaker, 16 Jericho, and 17 I have Rey Mysterio. So he's right in there for me. And for a while, I mean, not to go off to 10 – tangentially on him, but for a while I really had a kind of toss up between him and Bret Hart. I wasn't sure if I was going to put Bret higher than Jericho or not, which I'm sure is blasphemous to some, and I probably lose my Canadian license, but it kind of went to the wire with those two.
Yeah, he's someone that has. Why don't we go through it? Because I definitely think he's got, you know, this is going to be like an interesting comp to a guy we're talking about later, where there's a lot of longevity. Right, a lot of years, so he's going to rack up some of that kind of, you know, crap and nonsense toward the bottom. But he's got so much high level stuff that he's got to be ranked up pretty high. So nuance, obviously longevity not a concern, and it's quality longevity. It's not shit longevity. It's not just compiling and hanging around for years and years and not putting on high quality stuff. I mean, he was putting on great work in this most recent run, and this is almost 20th year that he's been around. You know, minus a few that he took off. Flexibility, great heel. I don't know if I go as far as a great face, a very, very, very strong face. And that might just be me. Like, I was never a huge fan of the, like, overly shticky Jericho from, like, 2000-ish. But he definitely was very good. I prefer Jericho as a heel. O4 faced Jericho I liked a lot in the Christian feud. And Intangibles. Great charisma, great control of the crowd. Really good at, I guess this might fall more on a character work, we'll get to it, but really good at kind of refreshing himself. And just when he's getting old, he comes up with a new slant or a new look on his character, a new tweak here or there. He feels, for a guy that's a little bit smaller and a guy that maybe didn't get put over, you know, I think Parv mentioned this for this generation of guys on when he was on For Your Consideration, guys that weren't like put over and made by the generation before them, that, and it kind of stung that whole mid-2000s generation. Despite that, I think he's a guy that fought through it. It just took him longer to get there. But I think he feels now, and maybe it has to do with like a lot of his crossover work too, where he's become a pretty, you know, well-known name in pop culture. Did Dancing with the Stars, did you know, all, when VH1 was churning out all those Best Week Ever stuff, like he was all over those things. Pretty well-known music star, obviously, with Fozzy. So he's a guy that's, you know, brought a lot of attention from outside of wrestling as well, and I think that adds to his feel, his credence. He comes in and he feels like a big-time guy returning every time he comes back.
Yeah, and he constantly comes back different.
Yeah.
Which is nice and welcome in a lot of ways. If I could jump on what you're saying about his face, I think I agree with you that I don't know if about a great face, but there was a period, I would say in early 2000, where I thought he was bordering on being a great face. I think what held him back there is he was still kind of learning the ins and outs of being a top level face. But aside from that, I think I would agree he's much more liked as a heel. I mean, even this last character, is it a face putting people on a list? Is that a face thing to do, to scream at them that they're on a list?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Even when he was a face in 2000, he was like an asshole face. So it's like, yeah. I mean, the only time I feel like he was a pure face was maybe that bit of 04 when he's trying to get revenge on Trish. But even then, he's still kind of a dick.
Yeah, and I remember at the time too, like hoping that it would actually turn out nice. Like for once in wrestling, I would like someone to get something, to have something nice.
Right.
Like maybe him and Trish just fall in love and have babies.
And be just happy. Once. They were a cute couple.
Yeah, and look, two Canadians. I can't really complain there.
Right. Could have made a superior race of Canadian babies.
Blonde hair, blue eyes. This is taking a turn. Chris Jericho.
Hey, it is the week. It is the week. It's been that kind of week. I meant superior wrestling babies, but that's fine. Yeah, it was. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to keep talking about the Chris Jericho master race if we keep going. But, you know, great heel. I mean, tremendous heel. And a different... Yeah. A different heel every time. Like you, it could almost be two completely different people from, his 2000 late 2001 heel to his 2008 heel. Like it, right. It really is two different performers completely.
Oh, not yet, not even close. And when he comes back every time too, like I feel like when he first comes back, he gets a pop. And then he gets kind of stale. Like people remember, like you know, to compare it to Foley in a way. At first. And the difference is Foley never really changes, and it's been diminishing returns every time he shows up. Whereas Jericho, every time he returns, just when you think, all right, maybe this was like one return too many, he finds a way to make it work. Like, I feel like the last three or four times he's come back has started like that, you know, where it's been kind of shaky to start, and then he figures it out. Like, even this most recent time when he came back, everyone was kind of annoyed that he was like kind of going toe-to-toe with AJ Styles, and he kind of was just wearing the scarf and doing the cool dad stuff. And then his slow burn started to become like the gimmick that he was doing this cool dad thing.
Yeah,
and that became the gimmick.
And he got stupid idiot over as a catchphrase.
Right. It's amazing. So I think that goes towards intangibles, that he has that ability to switch his whole – a guy that everyone knows so well can just completely convert you to – how he just presents himself week to week and how he goes about his business week to week, to me, is a great intangible to have. all right, Jay, jump up factor, memorable peak matches, moments, and storylines. So I mean, he's got loads of these, right? The Shawn Michaels one probably toward the top of the list. And both Shawn Michaels ones, 03 and 08. Obviously, this Kevin Owens one kind of comes out of nowhere and ends up being a pretty big one. The CM Punk feud. Are there any other, I guess, well, how about Stephanie McMahon, right? I mean, that's a pretty well-known, famous one. They went on for years, him and Stephanie. especially 2000 was probably their peak as far as working together and being really good. His series with Benoit in 2000 was really good. Even the feud with China is like memorable, and he's the first
good
person,
matches out of China.
Right, the first person to get those good matches out of her, and that's what kind of turned his street cred in the WWF around, as far as the backstage, booking team goes. At first, they were against him. He had to learn how to work the style, and then he has those matches with China, and he kind of won everyone over. Some good stuff with Angle, so he's got tons of good matches here and there. And then, of course, the Christian storyline as well. Any kind of feuds or stories that I've missed here?
I just watched it recently. The three-match series with Rey Mysterio in 2009 is tremendous. Like 2009 is a pretty rough year watching pay-per-views back to back to back. But Rey Mysterio and Chris Jericho killed it every time. And it wasn't just because of Rey. They do the finish. I think it was the second match where Jericho rips the mask off Rey. And it's perfectly timed. I don't even know how he does it. I slowed it down kind of see what was happening, but it was wonderful. I would also bring up that I think he's the first guy who started getting like I liked his feud with Cena, like when he left in 2005. I think that SummerSlam match is a little bit of an underrated little gem between him and Cena, and I mean it does end up being kind of one of the catalysts for the crowd kind of booing the hell out of Cena for the rest of the year, because it kind of started there. But I quite like the work he did in helping build up John Cena as the top guy in the company at that point, because he's the only one who did it.
And he did it twice. He did it in 2002.
That's right.
He was the only guy to lay down to in the beginning. But yes, he does. They have the three-way with Christian, which is very good as well. And then even the next night on Raw is a good match when then he gets carted off. And that's a really memorable moment too, when they carry him out. And remember, he's screaming and crying as security's dragging him out of the arena.
And I would add too that like he's always really good in the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And he always helps every Royal Rumble match he's in. Especially, I think 2016 is the one that springs to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I found he really kind of held that one together.
And how about 03 when he gets, that knot over his eye with the cane where he gets bashed with that? And that's a famous one, too, when he eliminates Shawn Michaels. Michaels is number one. He throws him out right away and beats the shit out of him. Leaves him bloodied. He was really good, too, as the shit stirrer when he first turns heel after WrestleMania 24, if you remember. Because that was one time he was definitely stagnated a bit. When he came back in late 07, he has the feud with JBL. Right, was it JBL he had the feud with?
Yep.
Well, before that, he challenged Orton for the title, and JBL cost him, right? Was that what it was?
Yeah, like, and then he fought JBL.
So that was his first return after he left in 05. So that's fine. The JBL feud is kind of blah. And then after WrestleMania, when he starts to do the... kind of plays that in-between devil's advocate for Batista and drives a wedge between him and Shawn Michaels over retiring Flair, and then that leads to the heel turn. That's some of his best work. And that's when he debuts like the Nick Bockwinkle style heel swagger and promos, and that's when he ends up doing the thing where he punches Michael's wife when he throws him through the Jarratron 5000, whatever it was.
Yep.
just an awesome, awesome storyline with some really good matches, too. The one with the last man standing where then he ends up coming back and cashes in on the scramble match, if you remember.
Yep.
And then they have the ladder match in No Mercy, of course, which is a classic. And, and then the other thing I was going to say is he ends up having a, just when it seems like maybe he's fading again in early 09, remember he loses to John Cena, he loses his title to him when Cena comes back from injury.
Stupid.
And then you get to early 09 and you start to think, all right, maybe he's running on fumes a little bit again. He's doing the thing with, what was he doing in early 09? Was he in Money?
Legends.
Right, the Legends. Okay. So that's right. Well, he has a good feud with Ricky Steamboat.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good. But he's kind of lost other than that, right? I mean, he's not really feuding with much. And then they team him up with Edge, and it's like, all right, this may have some promise. And then Edge gets hurt, and then they stick him with Big Show, and you're kind of like, ugh. And then they end up being a really fucking good team. Like, Jericho was one of the highlights in 09 and 10 as a team. They were tremendous together. Show was in great shape. Jericho had the heel swagger going, and they just worked really well as a team. They have a really good tag title run. And again, it's like just when he's on fumes, you think, he turns it around and finds a way to keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just – the only thing with Jericho is that I found, as good as they were just very unlucky that their team happened in that year with those teams they had to fight against. Like, they're fighting Crime Time. They're fighting that lame Michaels Triple H DX.
Right.
Like, it would have been – like – it's a shame the Usos weren't ready yet. They probably could have gotten some good matches out of them.
Yeah, and even like remember the Hard Dynasty was kind of around them, but they were kind of bleh, like they hadn't
not
really
yet
clicked. Oh, was that before that?
No, they were coming, but they just weren't ready yet.
Right.
You know?
And then, well, who did they fight to? Morrison and R-Truth, like that. Yeah. Like that was the team at WrestleMania they fought. So yeah,
what's up with that?
Yeah, it's just not good stuff. Who do they end up losing to ultimately? Do you remember?
Michaels and Triple H at the ladder match, the end of the year.
But don't they get it back? Aren't they champions at WrestleMania?
Are they? That's the two. I haven't watched 2010 yet. I mean,
okay.
I've watched.
Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil it for you.
Damn it! How am I going to watch the rest now? I'm done.
I'm pretty sure they're champions at WrestleMania 26. Oh no, wait. No, because Edge fights Jericho for the title at 26. I'm mixing my ears. When did they? I could have swore that was the opener. Man,
look, let's just be angry at Degeneration X for taking the title.
No, you know what? I'm thinking of Miz and Jericho, Miz and Big Show. Remember, Miz takes over the team. They're champions at WrestleMania because Jericho's world champion. He wins it in the chamber when Undertaker costs him. All right, so then you get the whole thing with Edge too. That was a pretty good feud. All right, so yes.
Oh, and just one more thing. We skipped his feud with Benoit, which is excellent.
Right. Tremendous. 2000 all the way into 01. And I guess that can...
Oh, and The Rock. How do we skip The Rock?
God, yeah. God, I'm telling you, he's got loads. Because when they mentioned the four-year consideration, they kind of acted like the feuds where he was lacking, which I thought was funny. Because when you go back, look at all the ones we just named. And then we had forgotten The Rock, which was like a huge one.
Yeah.
And all of those feuds have like at least one peak match in it. You know, like Sean has like two or three. The stuff with Jericho, fine, maybe not a peak match, but even like I feel like the DX one at TLC is like pretty good for what it is. But then he's got the stuff with Benoit. You got the Rumble ladder match, which is awesome.
Yep.
Rock, you would say at least two excellent matches. You know, out of the four, they fight four times. It's like No Mercy, Raw, Vengeance, and Rumble. Right. So like the Rumble one's like the worst, and it's still really good.
That's fine.
Triple H, yes, didn't have the best chemistry at times or the best storyline, but I like the Last Man Standing match. I think it holds up fine. And the Hell in a Cell, I think, is pretty good, too. And even the WrestleMania, you're a believer of the 18 match, right? That you
no,
think
I
not
hate
it. Okay, you hate
it. I
that
hate
match.
It.
Who's that?
We'll talk about it.
Maybe it's Brad. I think it's Brad. Because he does like...
My good name by saying things like that about me.
Well, the work over the quad is pretty good in that match.
I guess.
It's just the storyline sucks.
Yeah,
the only guy he never really had a good match with was Austin. And he caught Austin during that paranoid time where Austin was like not wanting to help anyone.
No. And I would even say like as recently as the Punk series, like both of those, I found both of those matches excellent.
Yes.
The Mania one, but then it got surpassed by the Extreme Rules one.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and even the stuff with Kevin Owens was really good. You know what I mean? And even AJ Styles, like he had pretty good, you know.
It was good.
I don't say great matches, but pretty good. And that was during his maligned time, so.
Does it bother you at all that his chest is like concave?
No, I'm just glad he's not like super juiced and overroided and like ready to drop dead. So I'm fine with a concave chest if it means he's alive.
All right. Well, to each their own, I guess.
The only time I thought he had a soft run is that is he around the whole time from 12 to 13, or does he come back twice? Because 12 is when he comes back with kind of the mysterious with the jacket where he's not talking and everyone thought he was going to win the Rumble and he doesn't.
No, he comes back at the Rumble 13.
Right.
He's
that's the run.
Entrance, and he gets a huge pop.
But then that run kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Right. That's the Fandango.
Yeah. Does he fight Bray Wyatt at some point too?
Oh, yes. Terrible. Yep.
Yeah.
Is that year? No, that might be the next year.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. He fights Bray Wyatt at SummerSlam 14, I think.
Yeah, because 13, Bray's debut, he fights Kane.
Which is also awful.
Yeah.
Wyatt sucks.
He does. The Jericho 13-14 stretch, I think, is his weak stuff. Yeah, he comes back in June 14 and feuds with Bray Wyatt, and then he disappears again in 15. He does, like, the house show only stuff.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in 2016. I'd say that 14 and 15 runs are probably his down. 13 and 14 runs are his down point.
I would also throw in. I mean, it's not horrible, but from the time he loses the title to Triple H,
right,
in 02 until the Christian feud is pretty. It's not great. It's unfocused. He feels like a guy really out of place in the promotion, I find. During that period.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong on that. I mean, they have the good Cell match, and then he's doing the stuff with it seemed like they were going to prime him for something good. Like, it goes to SmackDown. He's kind of involved with Hogan and, like, Team Canada / Un-Americans. And then what's he do? Does he go back to Raw? And then, well, he's got the team with Christian, which is pretty good. Isn't that late 02?
It might be. But again, like, to me, that just kind of felt.
So you're not counting a Sean feud in 03 as good?
Oh, shoot. How did I miss that? Yes. Yeah. I'd say the first half, yeah.
Okay. So most of 02 and, like, the back end of 03 is what you're saying is, like, a soft time.
And that's what I didn't like.
Yeah, okay.
yeah, I mean, look, jump up factor, he's yeah, huge.
Right.
Like, I think there's one little thing that hurts him that doesn't push him a little bit further up is that he is kind of missing, I would say, the very, very highest of high-end matches.
So what is his best match, you think? Does he have a 5-star match?
I don't have him as a 5-star match.
Okay.
I would put it as probably the Michaels ladder match for me.
Okay. Yeah, because I think Michaels 19 is like 4.
Yeah, that feels about right. I would maybe throw the Extreme Rules against Punk in the mix. I really like that one, but I wouldn't go 5. I think maybe I have it at 4.5. But I think I have the Michaels ladder match at 4.75.
Okay, and then what about the ladder match of Benoit?
I have that, I believe, at 4.25 or 4.
Okay.
And it was almost all because of the ending. I don't know if you remember the ending. The ending was just with Jericho climbing and Ben. It's the camera work that they messed it up. But Ben was clearly just killing time, tripping out of the ring.
Right, anyway, right.
Being a snob.
Yes. And then what about the The Rock? Any of the Rock matches? The Raw match?
I probably have it around 4.5, 4, depending on which one. But right now, they all feel a bit jumbled because I watched them recently.
Right.
But I feel like I like the Raw one the best of the four.
Yes, that's always been my memory that's the best one. That, yeah. Then No Mercy, then this kind of down from there, then Vengeance, and then the Rumble. Okay, so maybe missing that 5-star match, that keeps them from completely elevating up. Promo skills and character work, I don't think we need to spend a ton of time here. I think we've pretty much covered all his character.
Yeah, he's great.
Stuff, top-notch promo. Work rate, you know, there's been times where he's been considered sloppy early on in his career. There were times he was accused of wearing lifts in his boots, if you remember
right?
that
controversy.
And he was admittedly sloppy during that time period. You know, I think he's a guy that once he kind of did figure it out, and it's not as quick as you think, right? Because everyone kind of lauds the China feud as like, okay, this is when Jericho flipped the switch and he stopped. But I don't think he really stops the WCW quote-unquote style until that like 02-ish stretch. Like, I feel like he's still kind of like doing that haphazard, sloppier style. And I feel like it's a little bit later when he kind of learns how to really just work a match without just having to throw like all his high spots in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then by 07, 08, when he comes back, he's like completely in that mold to me. And, you know, these days I think, is he a like, you know, superior worker? No, but he's a guy that's getting by on guile. You know, he's a half tick slower on a lot of stuff, which is scary at times, like when he does the lion salt and shit like that.
Yeah.
But he still does it. Like, it's amazing to be a guy that was kind of known for being sloppy and is now a bit slower, has like, knock on wood, never really broken his neck or done any serious damage on that lion salt. He, like, there's been times where he just misses, like smashing his neck into pieces, but he nails it every time. If I'm ranking him, like, I'm not giving him a 10 out of 10 as a worker, but he's like pretty damn close. Like, he can work a slower heel style. He can sell, he can fly around, he can brawl. Like, he's intelligent. He knows how to work a crowd and slow things down. He can work as a tag guy, work as a solo. So, I mean, I think he does run the gamut as a worker.
Yeah. I would completely and I don't know, like, I'm okay with a degree of sloppiness in a match. Like, as long as when things look too crisp sometimes, I mean, it's great sometimes, but, you know, a little fall here and there, a little slip here and there, to me, it's not the end of the world in terms of someone's work rate. Like,
he's always felt glaring, though. Like, he'd like go flying off the rope. You know, like he was always like on the verge of like barely almost killing himself during that 01 stretch, you know. Like, there were a lot of times where he'd slip and you'd be like, oh my God, I just like narrowly averted danger. What, and you know what's funny is you mentioned that 02 time period too. I forgot about that whole little stretch where he had the match at King of the Ring with RVD. And remember, he ended up having the fight online with with the fans, that, like, because people were kind of shitting on him.
Like, I'm taking my website down. And
basically, he just like snapped. And then the Flair feud is kind of meh too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you that 02 stretch is probably one of his worst. But anyway,
well, I think like he didn't get that. They ended up booking him like a top heel.
Right.
But a top heel in the mid card. And so it didn't feel connected to anything else. And I think that hurt it.
Right. Yeah, it's like he couldn't be in that world title mix anymore. He just had to kind of done it. Then he goes to SmackDown, and maybe, but then Brock is ascending, and there's really no room for him there. And then they put him in the tag division, and then Michaels comes back and finally gives him something to do, like at a top level.
Then they got to move him back to Raw.
Right. Back to Raw for that.
Yeah.
So,
no, but you know, in the end, what I found with him is that the criticisms are all small,
right?
Like, it's nothing that really kills your enjoyment of the character. And there have been times where he's been a bit boring or whatever, but the highs more than weigh that for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he has any. His stretches of good to great, like, are much longer than the bad stretches, like. Like we identified, the down stretches, mid 02 to late 02, mid 03 to late 03, maybe the tail end of 04 when he's kind of feuding with Batista and that's kind of sloppy. But then he turns it on in 05. And then just that, you know, whatever, that 12, 13, 14-ish time period. But if you think of all the good he had, 2000, 2001, 2000, most of 2004, all of 2008, you know, almost all of 2009, most of 2010. You know, like, he's got just full years where, sure, are we analyzing every fucking TV match? No. And, of course, you know, as Parv has said and other guys have said, like, it's, you're going to measure, you know, I think Will was saying it too, kind of measure the years differently. Like, you know, 1 year of 88 is equals like three years in the 2000s because of the compression. So that, you know, that said, I still think Jericho has a lot of really good years. And I think the only thing that keeps him from really climbing the list at a higher level, like you said, is just never hitting that peak of a peak, never being the top guy. But you know what? We don't really heavily factor in drawing, so I don't think it hurts him that much.
No.
Yeah.
Like, in the end, too, like, it's sad, but in the end, it's a comparison game.
Yeah.
Right? And so, he finishes, say, a 16 for now. But, like, it's not his fault, really. Like, right. I have The Undertaker ahead of him, you know? Like, and that's actually an interesting comparison because they both have longevity. Undertaker has far lower lows,
right?
Like, way lower. But then he also has the far higher highs, you know. Yeah. So it all depends on what you value more as the evaluator,
right? Is it consistency, or do you overweight the highs and not take away as much for the lows, or are you looking more for just consistently of like, instead of like an all time Hall of Fame level, are you looking at like just excellent versus, you know, excellent consistency versus like that all-time classic, but a whole bunch of trash too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's funny because like when I say Jericho is say 16, like that's amazing.
Right.
Like to me, that's an amazing career. I would say the top 50 people on my list are all exceptional.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's one of those guys that maybe you don't think of, like I said, at the very blink, but then when you start to factor him in, you're like, whoa, you know, compared to a lot of guys, he had a really damn good 20-year career in the WWF, and he did it all and had checks every box. So, all right, that is Chris Jericho. Why don't we move on to our next candidate? And this guy's maybe the opposite of a long, lengthy run in the WWF, which is funny because I think he's one of the most indelible and memorable characters in the WWF. Like, he's a guy that if you probably mention his name, casual fans may remember the gimmick, and that's Razor Ramon / Scott Hall. Debuted in late 92. And then left in mid-96. So really just has almost maybe just under 4 years of work in the WWF. And then, you know, another really brief 3-month cup of coffee in 02, which, you know, barely caused a blip anywhere. You know, so another guy, if you look at the system, nuance, not too much longevity, but I think long enough to where he gets some points there. You know, it's not like he was just around a year. He had a full 4 years. Like, he wrestled a ton. Flexible. I liked him a lot as a heel in his early run, but he was to me one of the top faces during that time period, and just a weird time where there wasn't really a dominant person on top, but for some reason he always felt like he couldn't get over that hump to be like a world title contender. Like, I don't think he, as a face, like, I don't remember him ever even getting like world title matches, but he was pretty much the the face of the upper mid card, where he could slide up to that main event level, but he was the torchbearer of the IC division just under the world title. Intangibles, I thought he had a great charisma, really connected with the crowd. Organically, I think there is something to say for guys that organically get turned face by the crowd, and his was very organic. He just was so great as a heel that the fans just, started cheering him. So I think he checks the box decently here in Nuance. Now, the only thing that hurts is probably, like, he never really did a lot of tag stuff, but the times he did were good. Like, when he teamed with 1-2-3 Kid was pretty good, when he was in that click tag. So he's done good tag work, but just not, like, in a consistent tag setting.
Yeah, he was cool. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel ever forced. Whereas, like, some guys, it feels like they're trying hard to be cool. He was just cool. The way he moved. I would even say, to a degree, the way he spoke. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about that in the promos. Mm-hmm. But there was something different about him. And it's really weird. To hear you articulate that out loud, that, like, in a time when there was no one really clear dominant on top, he couldn't break through. It's strange thinking back on it. Like, it doesn't seem to make sense to me right now.
Right.
Because he was the perennial Intercontinental Champion, but, like, he was as popular as the top faces at the time.
Oh, so for sure.
Yeah, I don't see what and he's big. He's bigger than Bret Hart. I don't see what the problem was there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what made them not elevate him to that level. I mean, as far as I know, like, his known drug problems didn't really start till the tail end of 95 into 96. So it's not like it's not like they couldn't trust him to run the ship, to be the top guy. I don't know. I don't know whatever kept him from ascending to that point.
They had an alcoholic on top of the promotion from 98 to 2002.
Yeah, it's true, but we weren't there yet. but
how did he get home after shows?
I had a driver, son. The midgets. I don't know. I don't know what it was. That didn't, and he was part of the clique, too, so I'm not sure. I don't know why he never... They just chose Diesel over him, I guess, in 95, and was it.
What a stupid choice.
Well, and then, I mean, if you believe the Titan Sinking series and the stories that are told in there, that he was set for a heel turn early 95, again, and he was going to fight The Undertaker at WrestleMania 11. They had filmed promos for it in a cemetery, and they ended up backing off and just keeping him as a face, and I think that could have really rejuvenated, because 95, that sloth through 95 is probably his worst stretch.
Well, he's in there with dead weight.
Right. Jarrett for half a year. Then he's teaming with Savio Vega, feuding with Men on a Mission. They give
Dean
him a
Douglas.
Gift. They give him a gift at SummerSlam. That saves him to get the ladder match. But yes, then Dean Douglas toward the end of the year. That one of the worst match. I think the worst match of Ramon's career, probably that Dean Douglas match in Your House 4, is just off. I think it's like, I give it like one star. I think we reviewed it. And then, he picks up in 96. So the Goldust feud is pretty good, and then he leaves. But I think a heel turn could have really helped him in 95. And they could have redone the Razor Diesel feud, because they had a couple matches together, but it's not like they ran it into the ground. So they could have rehashed that a bit, and maybe Shawn as a face against heel Razor SummerSlam could have been cool.
Had a better match against The Undertaker than old fat King Kong Bundy?
Oh, yeah. 100%. That might end up being Taker's first, like, really good Mania match, hadn't really had one yet. So it comes the next year with Diesel, but this could have been the first time where they have a really good match together. And Razor could have been believable against him,
Well, yeah, they're the same size. And look at all the chest hair. Like, that's a man.
That's a chest. Take a look, Jericho.
Yeah, seriously.
That's a bloated, decomposing chest.
No wonder he wouldn't put him over in WCW.
All right, jump up. Obviously, I think he's got some obviously really big time matches and moments. The two ladder matches top the list. I think the Goldust stuff is a memorable storyline. It is the first time they really did something like that with the Goldust character, and Razor obviously was the perfect opponent for him at the time. I think his work as a heel when he first comes in with Bobby Heenan and Flair is very memorable. I love that Survivor Series match, the tag. I like his match at the Rumble with Bret as well. King of the Ring, 94, going to the finals, Walter Payton. So, he's got a lot of good stuff in there. I don't know if, beyond the ladder matches, I don't know if he has, like, I guess the click tag. Those are probably his three best matches, you think?
Yeah, I would say so, yep.
Yeah, and then even the match with Vader at the end, I like.
I hated it.
Yeah, you don't like that one?
Well, I didn't hate it. That's not the right word. I just thought that I was disappointed by it.
Yeah. I like it because they kind of hit the shit out of each other.
Yeah, I wish it would have been... For lack of a better word, more energetic.
Right.
It felt a bit slothy.
Yeah.
But I mean,
he was on his way out, so he's like, I'm not going to kill myself against Vader.
I'm not going to get my shit messed up from Vader.
I mean, the Goldust feud, it does suck that he didn't get that match at 12. I think that hurts the quality of that feud just a bit, because that would have been, you know, Goldust loses to Piper, but would they have given the title back to Ramon, or was that going to be non-title? Maybe they would have still been non-title then.
Like an unsanctioned kind of thing.
Right. I'm guessing that's what they would have done, so Ramon could get the closure, but...
Also, Goldust at that point, I feel, didn't have it yet.
Right.
In terms of being able to work a match under that character.
No, but a brawl with Ramon, if they do something similar to Piper, could have been good.
Yeah, that probably it would have been probably better than.
Well, I think that's a memorable moment too. I don't know if you remember, but they have that big fight backstage at Raw '96. Ramon and Goldust, yep. And Ramon just beats the shit up and throws him in the snow. Like, that's a really good moment as well for Raw. I guess maybe the. You know, one we obviously didn't mention is losing to 1-2-3 Kid, like that whole thing. Very memorable. One of the first memorable Raw angles. And then even the crybaby stuff, like, you know, whatever. Memorable.
I would say the debut vignettes were super memorable too.
Yes. One of the best vignette series of all time.
Like, was he really, like, I can't remember anybody really getting those vignettes too much after him.
No. Yeah, I think he might have been one of the last ones to really get like a series like that, whereas every week. Well, Goldust does, I guess.
In
95, so. But yeah, I mean, for a little bit, it feels like he's the last one in there for a while.
Is it a hate crime that he beat up Goldust? Like, now in retrospect?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think so. I think if that exact feud happens in 2017, the roles are completely reversed, right? I mean, he's basically bullying the gay guy. I mean, that's what it is. That's what the storyline is.
But the gay guy did, but then again, the gay guy, by today's standards, guy sexually assaulted him.
He did. He forced him. Well, not early on. Remember, he was just kind of sending him gifts and stuff, and he put his heart on his chest. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think it was way over the top early on. And they had Razor being super homophobic about it. It was a weird time. It was a weird
time. And the crowd was homophobic too.
Very much so. So any top moments or storylines you think we're missing? I think we covered pretty much his whole run. I mean, it's easy to cover.
Yeah, what strikes me with Ramon is that there's not too many bad matches in there. Now, there are some, which we can get to, but like, he's generally extremely solid anytime you watch him. The ones I would kind of mention in terms of like hurting him in this category are the Jarrett feud, which I think is just the pits. We may differ, but I didn't enjoy the IRS feud.
So, do you consider it really a feud? Because I literally just watched all those Raws, right? From 93 into 94. And IRS steals the gold. And it's kind of a Money Inc. feud with Razor, right? Because that's how he turns face, because they offer him the job cleaning. And then Razor costs IRS the match of PJ Walker. But during that whole time frame, he's still kind of feuding with Sean and Diesel, like when Sean comes back. And he's half feuding with them, and IRS is kind of lingering with the gold in the briefcase. And IRS is kind of feuding with Kid and Jannetty. And the Quebecers are in there, and Johnny Polo's in there. And it's just kind of this big mishmash of everyone. So it's not like a standalone feud where it's just week after week it's Razor and IRS. And then the match at the Rumble kind of comes out of nowhere, because Razor's almost feuding more with Sean in late 93 and early 94. And then they throw that match out there, the Rumble, which I don't think it's like 2.5. Like, I don't think it's a bad match. They do the dusty finish with IRS winning. And that's pretty much it for it. So I think the Jarrett feud is much more meat to judge on. And yeah, I think there's a lot lacking when it comes to that feud. The match at the Rumble is like not bad. And the WrestleMania match again, not bad. And then you get the handicap at In Your House 1, and Savio Vega appears. And I mean, Razor just felt kind of done at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that it's a feud. It's just like when you're doing 5 pay-per-views a year, I don't want any time given to IRS.
Yeah.
Like, I hate him. I hate everything about him except for one of his sons.
But even that even that match is still a vehicle for Sean versus Razor, you know?
Yeah. I guess. Not gonna fight you tooth and nail, but I don't want IRS on my TV.
Sorry. Then close your eyes.
then don't watch. I would also mention, in terms of his a bit of weaker time, we haven't talked about it yet, his return in 02 was not the most inspired.
No, I mean, you get the return moment. The most memorable part of that whole return is probably Rock making fun of him in No Way Out.
Rock destroying all three of them.
And then, I mean, obviously, all the, it was just a bad feud and pairing. Like, Austin is completely checked out, not giving a shit. And they have the thing where he's throwing the beer on him and locks him in the fucking beer cooler and, like, yeah, all that stuff. I think his most memorable and best work was when they smashed the cinder block on Austin's knee. Like, that wasn't bad. Yeah. And then I don't mind that match with Bradshaw at Backlash. Like, that's okay. But all the stuff with Austin.
Fine. Yeah. It just feels like, it feels just like such a giant step down for Scott Hall.
Right. Yes.
At that point, like, maybe I could see him fighting JBL.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, you're right. So, yes. No, I mean, I wouldn't put anything. I guess the way that helps in 02 is that it's so short, I don't think it really hurts. Right? I think the only ding he gets is that he has, like, not a great Mania match. But even that, I think, is, like,
it's not horrible.
A 3-star match. It's not like he had a dud at Mania, you know? So it doesn't pad his career. I don't think it hurts his career, that 02 run. I think it's just kind of there. I don't think anyone had super high expectations anyway. I mean, Hogan was the centerpiece returning at that point. Hall was kind of, I mean, because if you even think back to the end of his WCW run, Hall wasn't exactly like a top guy at that point. You know, he was, remember, he was on and off TV a lot as a drunk, and, you know, he wasn't really like.
And it's sad because, I think, especially in the early days of the NWO, he was the glue.
Right. Oh, for sure.
Like, Hogan was the superstar power. Nash was the muscle, but he was the cool factor of the group.
Yeah, and he's a guy that worked a ton, too. Like, he was right on TV a lot. No, I agree with that. But that faded the deeper he got into his addictions. All right, give me your thoughts on his promo and character.
His character was really interesting and different, which I liked. I did find that, like, he didn't have a money promo in him as Razor Ramon, I feel. There was something a little bit unbelievable about it. So I think he gets hurt a bit for that. But his character is great. He's interesting, great, and totally unforgettable.
Yeah, and like I said, I think he's the guy that if you mention to casual or non-fans the name Razor Ramon, probably clicks a little bit. Great theme music, great presence, felt like a star when he comes out. Looks like a star, big dude, but not overly muscled. You know, he had a really good look. He had a great finisher, you know, like that plays a role. The razor's edge, like fitting the toothpick.
Did we talk about his chest hair?
You mentioned it briefly, yes.
Okay, cool.
The chest hair, the toothpick, the gold, the colors, like everything about him, the vests, you know, like everything is just a really memorable character. yeah, he never really had that keystone promo, you're right. He had some good stuff, like the one at Survivor Series 92 with him and Flair is good. I know I've mentioned that one before. There's another one I had on top of my mind that I just forgot. I mean, I liked all the stuff with him when he's baiting the kid for the rematch and all that stuff. You know, King of the Ring 93 is one of my favorites. I had Mr. Perfect's mother dancing naked on a table for the amount of money I'm offering the 1-2-3 kid. But, I mean, those are all throwaway stuff. Yeah, you're right. I don't think he ever had that seminal, like, oh, that promo by Razor Ramon. But he could have done it because he does it in WCW.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And it's like the WCW character is just like a slightly more subtle version of what he's doing there, right?
Yeah.
And it's like because it was such a thick character, you couldn't get past to like, look at me.
Right.
You know, like nobody talks like that.
Right. Yeah, I think that definitely probably hindered him at times, for sure. Do you think the name hindered him, or do you think it was a cool name?
It probably did in higher-up's mind. Because the people on top at the time, I guess Diesel was on top, so what the hell am I talking about?
Yeah, see, I don't think it hurts him. Like, he had like Razor Ruddock in boxing at the time. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's a – I guess maybe what hurt him is if he would have had a first name and then Razor – was just like the nickname he always went by. You know
like
what I mean?
Philip Ramon.
Yeah. Johnny Ramon. yeah.
You know what? Now we think about it, he was for sure named after Razor Ruddock.
There you go.
Because that's what they do.
Right.
They take like two famous things. Like Terry Crews. What about Apollo Creed?
Hey, there you go.
Let's put it together.
So you think they took Joey Ramone and and Razor Ruddock and put it together.
Razor Ruddock. No, Marky Ramone. It must have been Marky Ramone.
But yeah, maybe if it was like, you know, but whatever. I don't think it hindered him. All right, Worker. I think he was a very good, could be great at times worker. I thought he, for a big guy, really bumped and sold like tremendously. Like I think selling is one of his very strong points for a face. you know, he could work as in a brawl. Like, I thought he was great, obviously, in those ladder matches. You know, I think he's great on top as a heel. He's got really good power offense. I love the matches with Brett, both of them. I think those are underrated. I think the Rumble 93 was probably one of my favorite Razor matches and one of my favorite Brett matches, too. I love that match. I think he's just, like, you know, the only thing he can really do, but he's a big guy, is, like, you know, fly around. He didn't have to, you know, he just threw guys around. Maybe a little too formulaic, but most wrestlers are. Like, the one thing I always hated was when he'd do the Razor's Edge near the ropes and get backflipped over.
Right.
Like, he did it every match. Like, stop doing it near the fucking ropes, you know? It's not going to work. Where are you going to throw him, you know? If he had done it once where he raised his edge to a guy to the floor or something, you know what I mean? Like, and then you could...
He'd be in jail.
Right. He'd be, well, I don't know. Triple H did it to Randy Orton, basically. But, you know...
Roman Reigns tried to murder Braun Strowman with a car and got a title shot.
So it's like, you know, if he had done it once, you could advocate him continuing to do it, but... Yeah, I don't know. It's like that was one thing that bothered me. So, you know, one other thing I'll add to his work rate, and then I'll shut up for a minute. a great, and because I do factor this in, a great squash worker. Really beat the shit out of jobbers, like a lot of those 93 Raws. Was really, really good at those matches. Like, to me, I do factor that stuff in because that was a big... How else do we judge TV at that time? Like, you know, you had to make those matches worth watching, and there's a lot of guys that didn't, but he was one that did. He really beat the piss out of jobbers. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, for a big guy, so smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so smooth the way his body moved in the ring. And I would say, aside from that spot where he'd get flipped over the ropes, most of the stuff he did in the ring made sense. Like, to B led to C. There wasn't a lot of bullshit that kind of came out of nowhere with him. His punches were also amazing. Like, I just love Ray. I could watch Razor Ramon punch people all day. And what I love about, and this is a small thing, but I think it falls kind of into work rate, is, and it's the reason why his first ladder match with Shawn is probably still my favorite ladder match of all time. He's the only one, and I think Shawn kind of picked up on it too, who really looked like he was just trying to hurt Shawn with the ladder.
Yes.
Like, whereas, like, now they do all kinds of stuff off the ladder. Yep. Like, he was thinking up ways to use that as a weapon. And I think that's really interesting and different.
Right.
And I can't believe people haven't copied it.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, they do not ever they're not, you know, Shawn does a couple of jumps off it. But yes, they're just using that as a weapon to destroy people, each other, I should say, during those matches. You're absolutely right. Like, that's a very unique perspective. So not only do they have the first ever mainstream ladder match, they also go out and deliver a complete unique style that was never really redone. The closest I'd say is probably Triple H and Rock at SummerSlam. I think they did, you know, a slightly poor man's version of that. So, yeah, I would say that's probably the closest that we got. But, yeah, no, you're right. He did bring that out as well. So where do you envision having Ramon on your list?
Right now I have him at about 52.
Okay. Very precise for it about. Yes.
Because I'm just looking at it. But I say what about because I still have guys to kind of go over and I'm going to do a couple more passes. But he's just hurt for me for not having the body of work that some other guys have. Like, for instance, the guy right ahead of him is Christian, which I never would have imagined putting Christian ahead of Scott Hall. But when I looked at their bodies of work, as much as the character was much more memorable from Scott Hall, mm-hmm. Christian's body of work was just incredible.
See, right? I'm abnormally high on Christian, so I think I'll have him much higher than Razor Ramon.
Yeah. But for instance, if I look a couple up, I actually, like, right now I have Bailey ahead of Scott Hall.
Okay, yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and there's a couple, we're not talking about Bailey, but there's reasons for it. Like, right
two
behind
reasons,
Scott Hall.
Yes. Yeah.
Bailey? Are we really sexualizing Bailey now?
No. She had two great matches with Sasha Banks.
There ain't no stopping us now, my friend. if you slept with Bailey,
we've gone full Trump. We've gone full Trump. Sexualizing 16-year-old girls. White
those
supremacy.
Those inflatable things are in her backyard watching you through the window of her parents' house where she still lives.
I'm in the basement, so that makes sense.
I have one behind Scott Hall right now, Xbox, Sean Waltman.
Okay.
And I find they're an interesting parallel. So I kind of got him there. Where do you think he's going to be for you?
Yeah, I'd say 40s, 50s. He's a guy that if he had a little bit more volume, probably raises up. But, you know, I feel like he doesn't have much bad to pull him down. So I guess it's just a case of how many other people ahead of him have higher highs and more good, right? Like, that's what prevents him from raising up. Like, I feel like I can't... There's nothing that really comes up that would punish him or drag him down. So I don't want to say he's penalized by not having a longer run. He's penalized by not having a longer run where he could pick up more good stuff.
Yes.
So I'm not penalizing him for lack of years. I'm penalizing him for not being able to compile more great moments, because everyone above him is probably just going to have more of those.
Yeah, or like a slightly like higher batting average.
Correct.
Not that his was bad, but like there are just guys that like
he's hit
better.
Like 275, you know, and this is gonna be guys like 280s, 290s, 300.
Yeah, like I mean, if I look at my list, I got a guy like I have like the bulldog ahead of him.
Yeah,
you know, who I think is actually kind of like he has one or two really high end matches and then a bunch of good. So I think they're an interesting comparison.
Yeah,
you know?
But the difference is he also has like the 80s tag title run, which was, you know, a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
So that helps separate him. Yeah. I think Owen Hart would be an interesting comp too for Razor. Owen just has more years to compile. So maybe if Razor has an Owen-like run, you know, he could have been higher.
Yeah, like Owen I have way higher.
Right. Because
like
he
I got
much
Owen
more years.
Yeah. Low 20s.
Yeah.
Like kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, for God's sake.
All right. Let's
we can only go up from here. And that was not another pun.
That was completely unintentional that time. Much, much higher highs and a lot lower lows.
Speaking of higher highs.
Yes, that segues perfectly. Breaking the glass ceiling down, maybe. Rob Van Dam is our next entrant. And another interesting candidate. Another guy that has maybe a deceptively longer run. You may remember he's around from 01 to 06 and then another little blip. He comes back for what? Oh, no, actually he's there at 07, right? And then he comes back for a brief run at some point. Am I right?
Yeah, he comes back. He comes back for one Royal Rumble at one point.
Right.
And then he's back in 2014.
Yeah, something like that. He has that run throughout the summer. 13 to 14. He comes back.
13 to 14. He fights Del Rio for the World Heavyweight title too.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. He's there. He's there for about a year. 13 to 14.
Yeah.
Kind of a forgotten run. But yeah, so he's there, you know, he's there for a while, of course, right? It's funny because I feel like there's these guys during that whole run where they waited too long and then finally went to them. Like,
yeah,
the moment in 04 for Benoit is really good, but it took too long to get there. Like, you know, his peak was earlier.
RVD, a year late.
Right. RVD took too long to get there. You could even argue Eddie almost did, but he was just so great that he made it work.
Yeah.
Even a Jericho, like, doesn't get legitimized to, like, 08s. You know what I mean? Like there are guys that are just, you know, Kurt Angle's, like, one of the few that came up and got the title, like, when he was hottest, you know?
Yeah.
I think RVD is the biggest prime example of that. A guy that, if he had won the title in his peak in late 01, early 02, we're probably looking at him, like, way higher. But because they didn't give him the ball... And then they kind of shunted him. He didn't get as many opportunities to deliver the match as he could have had. His run from June of 01 until like December of 01 is probably one of the hottest in, I think, in WWE history. Like,
yeah.
He was mega over. And I still proclaim, and I think I went on the longest diatribe possible with both Kevin Kelly and Scott on the Place to Be podcast about why putting him in that No Mercy 01 match ruined his run and his career.
Yeah.
As a star.
I went on a diatribe too about how he should have won the World Rumble in 02.
Right.
Like, that's how strongly I felt about him as well. Like, I think we're on the same wavelength. I just think, like,
yeah,
he probably got derailed in that match, but I wouldn't even put him in that match.
Exactly. That's my point. He should have never been in there if he's not going to win. Like, don't. Yeah. And then he loses. He gets pinned. Like, you know, that's the worst part. He gets pinned. But don't even put him in there if he's not going to win, because he's just overshadowing both guys. Like, his star was so high at that point. It was a miss. It was a big miss. I mean, the two matches of Jeff Hardy were both, you know, very good. SummerSlam one's great.
I actually like the Invasion one more.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Both are excellent. You know, pretty good match with Jericho. And then he's like on the cusp. Like, the stuff on Raw with Austin week after week is tremendous, where he's trying to basically sneakily take over the Alliance, you know. And then if they didn't care, you know, they just didn't care. But if they cared and they wanted to keep things going, what they should have done is RVD pins Kurt Angle in that three-way to win the title. And Austin gets pushed out as leader of the Alliance, and RVD takes over as the new face of the Alliance. Like, that would have been the way if they cared about the storyline and wanted to keep it going and make RVD a star, but they didn't care about any of that.
They wanted Austin and Rock at the end.
Right. Again. And, you know, whatever. It didn't happen anyway, so. But, and then, you know, he's a pretty fun match with The Undertaker, and then the stuff with Regal was, like, fine. And then he gets heated back up again a bit. Like, he fights Benoit at SummerSlam, which is good. And he...
And you skipped over the whole Guerrero stuff, which is amazing.
Yes. You can flog me later for that.
I will.
It is Friday, after all. but the... yes, the Guerrero feud is awesome. And, like... And I think Eddie should get tons of credit for kind of revitalizing RVD after, you know, stalling a bit there in early 02. A three-match series that is tremendous. The Off-Forgotten Ladder match on Raw 2, which is really, really damn good. I love the Backlash match where Eddie just destroys him. you know, just beats him with his own move and that's it. And then RVD learns and comes back and wins his title back. And then he gets reheated. You know, you're thinking, okay, he beats Benoit at SummerSlam. Here we go. He's going to fight Triple H for the title. And the whole idea is that RVD is going to be the forefront on Raw. It's going to be the IC title. And then they end up deciding to create the title. And then Triple H beats him. And then
it's weird because normally people come out of feuds with Triple H like so hot.
Right. It definitely usually saves the careers.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't usually destroy them.
No.
So then he, you know, he gets basically side-checked into a feud with Ric Flair instead. And then his last gasp, in my mind, is the Elimination Chamber because he's super over. And pun intended, last gasp, because he crushes Triple H's throat with that knee. And, like, that's it. Like, you know he's completely fucked after that. You know what I mean? And you know what? I don't blame them because it was a sloppy fucking move and he should have tried it. And I don't blame Triple H for that at all. I mean, he, you know, in a different timeline, Triple H's career ends there when he destroys his larynx. But, you know, it doesn't
matter. Imagine how good wrestling would be.
Imagine all the difference if RVD ended Triple H's career. We'd probably have number five on this list.
Over.
Yeah. Who?
John Cena. He'd actually be an over face.
And then he gets that last kind of dead cab bounce that matched with Shawn Michaels on Raw, which is cool. And then that's kind of it. Like, just meanders his way. He's got the thing with Kane, which is fine. And then the tag with Ray, which is, like, pretty good. Like, I don't mind that. Team of Booker, which is take or leave. And then just when he maybe, you know, all right, ECW's coming back, he gets hurt, and he's out, misses that. And then they reheat him in 06, and that's when it was too little too late. And it was still cool that he won the world title. That's an all-time match at One Night Stand. But you know what? Then he blows it all away out the window. Puff of smoke.
Puff of smoke, right?
And that's it. Then he's done. Cooked.
So, and then he comes back and it's...
Yeah, whatever. Pretty much ran out of his whole career. So any of that stick out to you as a... I guess we didn't even get to the stuff yet. So nuance. Longevity, obviously, is decent. Flexibility, physically, he's flexible, but I don't think...
so flexible.
But, you know, he's pretty much only a face, like, his entire run, even as a heel. And he was fine in tags, but...
Was he a heel in WWE?
Yeah, I mean, he was.
Technically, yeah.
But he wasn't, really. I mean, he was so over, and he acted like a face. I mean, he didn't act like a heel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say you don't really get much heel work out of him in WWE. And not that flexibility is all about just tag or singles, but he doesn't... You know, the tag with Ray is good, but other than that... there's not much else going on. So yeah, I mean, and then intangibles. He had that crowd connection. He did.
Oh yeah.
You know, he felt like a guy who could have been a star. He had that star look. Even, you know, you can even toss in his 97 pop in. Like, that was a really cool moment on Raw when he shows up and he's Mr. Monday Night and all that stuff. Like, that was fun. He fights Flash Funk. But the I would give him like a above average score in nuance.
Yeah, I mean. He is so different than anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, I would even say, like, this – I mean, I don't know if this counts in work rate, but he just wrestled a completely different style than everybody else was wrestling too.
Yeah.
Which made him stand out, which probably made him hard to work against.
Right.
But also would kind of let him fit in almost any era.
Right.
Like, I could see him frog slashing people in the 80s. I could see him still around today. If he was still in tip-top shape, he would fit right in, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right, memorable moments. What are your kind of peak matches for him, if you had to list them off for someone?
I think his best match is that triple threat.
Yep.
I think that match is incredible. We watched it recently, and I couldn't believe how good it was. Maybe until the Benoit Michaels Triple H match, probably the best triple threat match in the company.
Mm-hmm.
Until that point.
Even better than the one with the Patriot, Savio, or no. the oh, one no. on Raw, yeah. No, Savio Vega crushing Farouk, and not that one.
No, I forgot about that one. Excuse me. Yeah, that one was amazing.
That was dog shit.
It really latched me to Crush, you know?
he did stand out in that match.
Oh, he was so good. And that heart punch stopped my heart. I liked the Hardy match at Invasion. I thought that one was great. I love the Guerrero beatdown. I thought he was also really good in the Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 22, where he won the Money in the Bank.
Yep.
And I thought the Cena match was quite good, too, in the ECW. But for me, like, he's one of these guys where it's almost not about the matches. He has them, but it's about every time you see him, as formulaic as he could be, watching, like, a different level athlete.
Right.
That's how I felt watching him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, ridiculous leaping ability. You know, like, hitting the frog splash from all different angles, which is, like, always really cool. The Van Damminator, the Van Terminator. You know, he had the whole arsenal.
And the way he took moves.
Right.
Like, nobody took a DDT like him. He's dead.
Right. Just straight up on his head. You know, his body just completely vertical. You know, even, like, back bumps and stuff. Or even when you do, like, the Rolling Thunder, it was really cool the way he'd land. He's super flexible. I mean, the way he could bend his body added to a lot of the impact of the moves he took. And one match I actually did like quite a bit was the Vengeance match with Orton, his last match when he beats him in the stretcher match. Like, I always liked that match for some reason.
Yeah, it's solid. It's solid.
Yeah.
And that was during a time when Orton wasn't getting great, having great matches with a lot of people.
Right. For sure, yeah.
They were fine, but it wasn't quite the same thing.
And some of his ECW stuff isn't bad either, like he's in there with the originals. And, you know, like, some of that stuff is fine enough. Nothing that ever really stands out, but, you know, good. Good enough, I should say.
Yeah, like, it's a shame. Like, I feel like if I had never seen him in ECW, I would have thought he was even better.
Right.
Because in ECW, he was like a madman with some of his moves, you know?
Yeah, just all over the place.
If you didn't have that comparison, you would be completely blown away by this guy. And even as it was, I was, and I'm sure other people were completely blown away by the things he could do.
Right.
But the problem with him is that, like, he runs into times where he's doing, like, next to nothing. Like, we went over his career, like, 03 to 06, there's, like, nothing.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, he's hurt for part of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, outside of the tag with Ray, which has its moments, but, I mean, the feuding with Rene Dupree and Kenzo Suzuki, like, it's not exactly a world beater level stuff. So, he's a guy, he's, you know, we contrasted a guy earlier that we said, like, you know, do they have higher highs and lower lows, or do you like consistency? I mean, this RVD to me is a guy that has some really good highs and some just really, I wouldn't even call them lows because they're not bad. It's just like peers of emptiness.
They're like a stoner, like an unmotivated stoner, like his lows.
Yeah, could you believe that was him like that?
It doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, like him at his least motivated could be a chore.
Right. Yes, I agree. So, I mean, I think this, you know, there's two times that he had the chance to possibly get himself, you know, ascending higher on this list. And that was '01 if he's protected a bit more and becomes champion, and then '06 if he doesn't fuck up his push.
And the sad thing is that, like, you know, he did his best work when he was motivated, right?
Right.
So the fact that they didn't take a chance on him in 2001, now this is on him for being the type of guy who lets that stuff bother him. But it's almost a shame because if they would have taken that chance, imagine how much more motivated he would have been to go above and beyond from that point on.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if they slap the title on him, I think everything goes a bit different, you know, a lot differently for him. I think his whole career is different. I think the whole trajectory into 02 is different too.
Yeah, and you probably get really, like, good, decently length singles matches against Austin, against Angle, against Rock. You know, like, you get some good meat there for him.
Agreed. All right, let's talk about his promo and character. Pretty much the same no matter what he was doing. Promo skills.
What do you mean, man?
Right, everything's the same. I mean, he could cut a good promo. He proved it at One Night Stand when he cut the promo of his life, you know.
That's great.
Yeah. So he shows he had it in him. He just never went with that style that often. You know, character is character. I mean, he's just him. He's just fucking Rob Van Dam. Like, there's no character. You know, I think it's just him.
I will say that, like, he was extremely good at getting the character over in the matches.
Right.
Like, if you watch that Invasion match with Jeff Hardy, he's getting that character over by doing the wild things, by the little nuances to the crowd and stuff like that. To me, that's his greatest character strength, not the microphone or anything like that.
I always hated when his ponytail came out. He looked weird with the long hair for some reason.
Terrible. Yeah. He looked like a fat Jean-Claude Van Damme when that happened.
Yes. Put the scrunchie back in. But it's there's not much more to it, but you're right. I mean, he did work it with it. Yeah, he's a fucking guy that didn't care. He's just a stoner who, if he caught him on the right moment, he could go out there and wow the crowd, and sometimes he'd lay around on the mat, you know, just what he was. But he is so unique. I mean, he is one of the most unique people in wrestling history. Like, there's really nobody else. Yeah, like, I don't think there's any comps to him at all. I mean, there were comps at the time, like, with him and Jeff Hardy when they're feuding, kind of like it seemed like a natural fit, but Jeff's not really like him.
No.
You know, outside of the drugs. He's not really like him. But yeah, so yeah, he's very unique. I mean, definitely one of the most unique people in wrestling history.
Yeah.
Especially WWE.
And good, like, you didn't get to see it a lot, but good chest hair. Like, yes, not horrible, quality. Not Ramon. Like a 0.5 Ramon.
Do his tights play a role for you? Like, to me, Razor Ramon's tights played a role for me.
Yeah, and I actually really love Ron Van Dam's attire.
Yeah.
He just looked different and interesting, and it, man, he must have paid a fortune for those.
You don't think? I just picture he had an airbrush machine in his basement and just fucking did it himself.
He got high and painted on himself.
There you go. Or had Jeff Hardy just do it. I don't want to sleep on that 97 run, too. Like, it's not long. It's just a couple matches, but it's pretty good, you know? Like, he's got some inspired stuff at that point. Like, he felt like a big deal coming in, you know, when he arrived. So, all right, work rate. Again, a unique worker. I like his style a lot. Yes, sloppy. Yes, potatoed guys. Yes, if you get in there with an 0-1 Jericho, you're going to get kind of a train wreck. But he knew how to piece a match together. Another great seller. Like, I love the selling of the frog splash whenever he'd hit it.
Yeah, it would hurt him.
Yeah, he'd like roll around on the ground for a minute before he could get there. Timed his moves well. You know, great athleticism.
Innovative with weapons.
Yes. Yep.
Like, the way he would do certain things with certain things was... That was a terrible sentence. I'm sorry.
No, but it works. It made sense in this format. It makes sense because, right, he's throwing a chair at a guy and kicking it back at him. You know what I mean? Like, I hate moves where, like, a guy's holding the object and someone would punch or kick it into them. You know, like the stairs. Like, a guy's holding the steel stairs and someone kicks them into him or something. But the reason the guy's holding the chair is because he throws it in his face and your instinct is to catch it. And then he'd kick you before you could put it down. Like, that worked. You know, it made sense. He's a guy that could work in a brawling setting. He could fly with a Jeff Hardy, or he could brawl with a Jeff Hardy. You know, he seemed realistic in main events. Like, he seemed like a guy that could hang with Steve Austin, that could hang with Triple H, that could hang with Shawn Michaels. You know, like, he didn't feel out of his league. Like, he didn't feel small, you know, with those guys. Like, he felt like he could fit in with his offense, fit in with John Cena. Right.
Yeah. And, like, I think that goes to, like, he was a pretty decent striker with his feet.
Right. Yes. Educated feet.
Oh, who was more educated in the feet? Who has a PhD, him or Haku?
Or, Haku's got the suction cup feet. Okay. RVD and X-Pac have the educated feet.
You're right, excuse me.
Yes.
But yeah, like, totally unique from anybody.
Right.
Anybody who's ever been and who will ever be. I'm going to say it. There will never be another exact Rob Van Dam.
Right. No.
Exact.
No, I agree. So where does that get him on your list? Does he make it?
It's stupidly high.
Okay. Just like him.
Like, I have him around in the mid-30s.
Oh, wow. Like, that is very high. I would be shocked if many other people have him that high.
I know. But for me, like, it's the uniqueness of him. Mm. Like, there is no one else even close to being anywhere. I don't know why I'm running on with these sentences.
Okay.
Apologies to you. Apologies to everyone. I feel like I've let everybody down. No, I have him very high, and I don't know why, but it makes sense to me.
Okay. I picture him in my mind, like, more in the 60s. You know, it could be number 4, it could be number 20, or it could be in the 60s. But I don't know. I might have to think more. I don't know. I'll see where he goes up and down the list, but I just think his down periods are so down. I don't think he's got that one, like – I don't think he's got that one all-time classic feud where you can say – he's like you know, you hear like Willie's got sort of like Larry Zbyszko, like, all you need is a Bruno feud and that's it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't feel like RVD has that to say, yeah, he had a bunch of downtime and yeah, he was like, but he has this. I just feel like he doesn't have that. And that's what he would need for me to really go up the list.
Yeah, I think for me, what he also doesn't have, though, is he doesn't have almost any bad matches.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of other guys do.
Yeah.
Like, and I think like that kind of that really helps. And he is hurt by the fact that he doesn't have like the tippy top top match.
Right.
But again, like the consistency and who he is moves him up the list. Like I have him ahead of a guy like say like this is gonna be blasphemy, but I have him ahead of like a guy like Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, see, I mean, I don't think that's blasphemous because Steamboat just doesn't have the depth. How do you have him like, compared to like a Tito Santana?
Like three ahead of him.
Okay. See, that surprised me because I expect Tito to be in my 20s.
But that being said, I'm not completely done researching Tito.
Right. Okay.
Like I have more to do there and he will probably move up ahead. Yeah. But like for instance, I have him ahead of Jake, for example. Like, yeah. And I know I don't want to get into a whole thing about Jake again, but, but yeah, like that's kind of like where I have him. Like, for instance, the guy right ahead of him is I have Goldust ahead of Van Damme.
Okay.
And Rick Rude ahead of him, and he's kind of in that mix for me.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't put him in that mix off the top of my head, but maybe I will as I go through things further.
Well, see how much of a follower you are.
I guess so. I'm just going to submit your exact list. All right.
Don't you dare. It's my list.
All right, sir. It is time for the main event. And that is, of course, Triple H. And yes, we're going to talk about him, of course, because he is hot topic here. He was just on the Worst of the Worst For Your Consideration podcast. You know, where do they all settle? Are they having him on the list?
It was kind of... One guy is going to have him in the top quarter. I think Steve's going to have him in the top quarter. Will, he's not on the list, but that's no surprise. And Dylan, I'm not sure. He kind of – I don't think he really committed to putting him on, but he was not very complimentary about it.
Right, no. Of course not.
Yeah.
He's interesting. I mean, again, a compiler, right, on Around Forever. All right, well, let's just do it. So longevity, yeah. Yes. Flexibility, I mean, yes, he could be a heel or a face. I don't know how good he was. What do you like him better as?
I don't know. I liked him in a lot from like June 01 to like December 01.
Okay, so face.
Injured. Yes. Obviously as a heel. Like
But he's got shades of heel, right? He's got like the Ric Flair cosplaying heel. He's got the, you know, psychotic, angry heel. He's got the blue blood heel. He's got the teenage, you know, American Pie heel in 98.
Stifler heel.
Yeah, you know, he's got the Stifler heel in 97.
I think he's one of the worst baby faces they've ever had.
Okay.
All right. Like, that's how strong. Look, here's the thing with Triple H, just as a preface, all right? Like, like I'm going to be perfectly honest. I hate Triple H.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's killed the business.
Right.
And there's lots of reasons for that. But I actually don't want to consider that when I'm considering him for this list.
No, and it shouldn't. And just like people shouldn't give him any credit for NXT when considering this list. You know what I mean? Like, none of that should count. None of it. None of the backstage stuff. None of that. And I know you'll get people saying, well, would he have been in that? It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter.
No, he did it. He did it. Like, and yeah, like, that argument of, like, he got opportunities that other didn't. Like, it's true. But it's what he did with those opportunities, and lots of other guys got that.
Right.
Like, and Hulk Hogan got more opportunities than anyone.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, so yes, would he have been there if he didn't marry Stephanie? Who knows? Probably not. But no, he was. That's what happens. So you just can't factor that in. I just don't think you can.
And it's a slippery slope because like if you're leaving him off the list for backstage things that he did or whatever, right? And you have Chris Benoit on your list, like that's an interesting double standard.
Yes, yeah.
Like the murderer is fine, but like, but because he murdered a business, like it's not as bad as a person. Like,
yes, because he didn't allow Goldberg to pin him at SummerSlam 03. You know what I mean? Like, so you do have to separate that a bit. Intangibles. I mean, like he knows how to wrestle. You know what I mean? Like he knows how to put together.
Everybody
a match.
On the list knows how to wrestle. I hope.
Yeah. To me, his biggest intangible is that he's a student of like history, and whether he's good at it or not, he attempts to leverage the better parts of the wrestling business into his character matches.
Yeah, he just doesn't learn from history, right. And that's almost worse in a lot of ways than being like he's just a he might be a great student, but then put your knowledge in practice for God's sake.
And he doesn't learn from his own history. I mean, like how many times does he need to main event to silence at WrestleMania? Like, you know, after the third time, I'm hoping he realizes it's not going to work. But you know, he's done it three times now, and it's like, all right, at some point you have to deliver in these matches. Like, what was his? All right, let's do jump up. Okay, so what's his memorable peak matches moment storyline? So, I want to go through his WrestleMania matches because in WWF, like, that's the peak, right? I mean, that's your best shot. So WrestleMania 12, memorable moment, nothing to do with him.
My favorite.
WrestleMania 13, whatever, you know, fights Goldust, fine. WrestleMania 14, Owen, pretty forgettable match.
Whatever, yeah.
Right, WrestleMania 15.
Kane.
Shit match, but a memorable moment when he turns and him and China unite. WrestleMania 16.
But that's not even hit in his match.
Right, but I'm just saying it's a moment. Yeah. It's a moment. WrestleMania 16. Okay match. I think the best part of the match is him and Rock. Memorable for probably the wrong reasons. Going over in the main event. WrestleMania 17. You know, very good match with Undertaker. Nothing worth shattering. Fine. WrestleMania 18. Here we go.
Shit's the bed.
Right. First shot at your main event and... You know, I don't call it like a dud or anything, but I probably go like 3 stars, which it needed to be more than that in that spot. And they didn't help themselves by being last. I like what they tried to do with the match with Jericho working the quad and everything, but the storyline was stupid. And it was all about Stephanie and, you know, whatever.
And it was the first match after the injury that was an absurd length for what he could do.
Right. Yes.
That's going to become a theme going forward.
WrestleMania, what are we on?
19.
Yeah, we all know that one, right, Booker? Yep. And again, the match isn't bad, but just he just can't get out of his own way, you know what I mean? WrestleMania 20, best Mania match to date, 3-way. And I do think a lot has to do with him. Like, I don't think he was carried in that match. Like, I think he's a big part of that match, and he does the right thing. He taps out clean. He could have easily just had Shawn take the fall in that match and been, you know, covered. But he doesn't. He taps clean to Benoit, puts him over. WrestleMania 21, again, I think he does the right thing. The match sucks. But again, another one
that went
too long.
Allow me to just disagree a bit, though. I don't think he does the right thing.
Okay.
The right thing is him getting obliterated there.
Yeah.
Like, and it's – anyway, I don't want to get it too much into the booking, but just that.
Yeah, I don't think he had to get obliterated. Batista does take a lot of that match, more than you
but
may remember.
But it's 20 minutes with too much Triple H – too much, like, too many comebacks, too many him.
I know.
Like, Batista shouldn't be, like, brought to the brink of death against Triple H.
I know. And that's kind of the forgotten one. You know, that's kind of the forgotten one when it comes to the bloated main events. I always forget that one, right? That's one that just kind of there. So, all right. So, WrestleMania 23, he misses. WrestleMania
22 is Cena.
Oh, 22 is Cena. What did you think of that one?
That's good. It's good.
Okay.
No more, no less. You?
Yeah. No, yeah, same. All right. WrestleMania 23, he misses. 24, Cena or in Triple H. Fine, right?
I like that one a lot, actually.
Okay. Tell me why.
I think it's a really great little sprint. Like, it's a fun sprint, and I really enjoy the three guys' work, and I like the surprise ending with Orton taking, which no one kind of called at the time.
Right. Okay. 25 again now. Add that to the checklist of missed steps. Match, I should have never closed that show. And if it was going to close that show, it needed to be a red-hot brawl. The feud was pretty good, right? The feud was well done. And then they go out there and just wrestle a fucking match. You know, it's like, where's the anger? Where's the angst? And he's champion. So it's not like just taking the title from Orton is the goal. He's already champion. The goal was for him to destroy Randy Orton. Stupid. Or WrestleMania 26, Sheamus, whatever. 27 and 28. Where's your stance on the Undertaker matches?
I hate 27. I quite enjoy 28.
Okay.
Which I know, like, everybody's kind of flip-flopped on that. I think 27 is a really interesting capsule of what's wrong with him as a performer.
Yeah, how so?
Like, because the entire – I mean, this is just a small thing, but it's the storytelling that they're doing in the match. Like, they're going for this epic thing, right, which is all of his matches. But the whole concept of the whole feud was that Triple H needed to end the streak. Like, that was the whole thing. I need to end the streak. That's the thing that's driving me. I need to end the streak. And he kept going on and on about needing to end the streak. And then he spent half the match just telling Undertaker to stay down.
Right.
Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, pin him. Like, if you need to win the match and you spent weeks building this point up, right, just pin him.
Instead, say, I need to retire the Undertaker. Like, say, yeah, that, you know?
That's fine. And then, like, you can do the thing where you hit him with one move, then you wait around, you know? But, like, it was the wrong match on the wrong show. That's another Triple H problem. But go on.
All right. So 29, Brock Lesnar, a huge miss, right? We didn't need another one, and we didn't need him to win. Probably one of the biggest missteps of the Brock run. And then we get to WrestleMania 30. Of course, probably his best Mania match. Depends how you compare it to 20, but it's up there with Daniel Bryan. Does the right thing, has a great match, turns back the clock, or maybe found a new number on the clock that he had never seen.
Well, to me, that match, I love it. I think it might be the best match of his career, I think.
Yeah, it's in consideration.
But I think it's quite an indictment that, to me, that's the first one-on-one singles match with no gimmick that he has that's great.
Yeah.
And it's 20 years into his career?
Yes. And it's Daniel Bryan, who's like a top 15 candidate on the list, you know. All right. So WrestleMania 31, Sting, you know, whatever. He pulls him to a decent match, but the end is stupid. And then 32, one more terrible cherry on the shit Sunday of just a stupid, you know, going last and going 20 minutes again for the fourth time. You think he would have learned. Still hasn't. And here he is, you know, gone up there and plodding through a match with a guy that no one cared for. That's the one that needed to be... Like, even more so than Batista, just needed to be Reigns spearing him, smacking Stephanie, and then pinning him for the title. Like, that had to be it. And then this year, I thought the Rollins stuff was fine. Like, I thought that was a fine match, and it was middle of the card. It was where it should have been, and Rollins went over. So, like, I'm fine with all that. All right, other peak matches, just quick off the top of our heads. No Way Out, 01, you know, Three Stages of Hell. I think his stuff with Evolution and The Shield was great. I really like all that stuff.
Foley,
obviously, yes. Both Foley matches. Even the MSG one's really good. The tag with Austin against Benoit and Jericho is great. I like all the matches with Benoit for the most part. The ones with Eugene kind of suck, but the 2-3-ways are really good.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Raw match with Shawn in December of 03. SummerSlam 02 with Shawn. It's a great match. I mean, I like all the stuff with The Rock. Like, I think the Iron Man is a big check mark for him because no one thought that's something those two guys go out there and do. And they went out and made a really super compelling, fun Iron Man match work. And the match of Backlash shouldn't be slept on either.
Yeah. And the Iron Man match, very different than the one that came before it.
Right.
There would only be one, and they kind of reinvented it a little bit, which was nice.
Yeah, I mean, 2000 is obviously his best year. Right? He's got the Jericho match, which is really good. The 3-way SummerSlam, which is good, even with the concussion. And then I think he's got a sneaky, fun late 2000 before he turns heel. Like, I like him as that tweener where he's fighting Angle. Yes, they never had like great chemistry, but still fun. And then I like the match of Benoit a lot in No Mercy. Like, I think that's a kind of a forgotten match for him. And then, you know, then the turn and then the injury. And then just not really the same for a while.
The only things I would say from like the injury that I mean, I like triple threats and stuff that we talked about, but I like the run with Flair in the fall of 05.
Yes.
Love the cage match. And I really love, and I hate last man standing matches, but I really like the last man standing match at Survivor Series 05.
Yeah. Both super bloody and gory. And I actually don't mind the Big Show feud either. Like, I kind of like that where he beats the hand and, you know, they had that match at New Year's Revolution. Like, that wasn't bad.
I just would have liked the Big Show to win.
Forget it. No way.
Yeah, I know. Not happening,
And the DX feud, obviously fucking terrible. Or feud. I mean, the run, the reboots, any DX reboots are terrible. 09, is that the 3-way at Survivor Series?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Okay, you liked it? I was wondering how that held up.
Yeah, like, I watched it recently, and I think I went 4.
Okay, cool.
On it.
Like, you know, he's got the run as the face of SmackDown, like, when he's feuding with Edge and that stuff, like, in that summer where he's the champion over there as a face. You know, we're missing a lot of swaths of his career. Like, we haven't even talked about, like, Blue Blood era. I think his stuff with Foley in 97 is really good, like SummerSlam and Canadian Stampede. I like those a lot. The fall, he's just kind of Shawn Michaels, you know, buddy. He doesn't really do much throughout that whole fall. Anything stand out for you, like, in that 98 run as the leader of DX?
No. Like, no.
Ladder match?
It's good. It's good. Like, it's like we talked about earlier. It's a poor man's version of the one that came before it.
Right. 99.
And then he gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets hurt again. Yeah, 99 is kind of whatever.
Rough year. But that's a rough year for everyone.
Right.
And then, like, I mean, you were mentioning 2008. I really did not enjoy that run at all.
Yeah, the SmackDown run.
No, like, and just the top level matches for me just didn't click. I didn't like him as I didn't like every paper. But I did not enjoy, like, I did not enjoy him going over Jeff Hardy when Jeff Hardy was at his hottest.
Right. No. And then he does put over Hardy at the end of the year or whatever, right? At the, is it Armageddon where he beats him for the title?
Does he get pinned? I don't think he gets pinned.
No?
It's a triple threat, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought he did first. Who else is in there? Edge?
Well, maybe he does pin him. Yeah, but it is Edge. It is a triple threat, though.
I feel like he does. Is that Armageddon 08?
Yeah.
Jeff Hardy, Edge, and Triple H. Let me see. Triple H performed a pedigree on Edge, and Hardy hit the Swanton. Yeah, he pinned Edge.
Of course he did.
I thought he pinned him at some point, though. Didn't Hardy pin Triple H in some match on TV or something?
Maybe on TV. I'm not remembering. I just watched the pay-per-views recently.
Yeah.
I think the big problem with Triple H, I mean, there's a lot of problems, but the big one is, the first big one, is that for every person he has a great match with, there seems to be one that's terrible.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Like, he has that great match at SummerSlam with Shawn Michaels, but that Hell in a Cell is one of the worst matches I've ever seen.
Well, the two he has with Shawn that are good are at SummerSlam and Raw, and the rest are all, you know, the Armageddon one is like, they try to shoehorn that Three Stages of Hell when they didn't need to. Then the Rumble Last Man Standing is pretty shitty. The Hell in a Cell takes forever. One of the ones I actually do like is Taboo Tuesday, because Shawn had the torn meniscus in his knee or whatever, and they just did a simple match. Like, I thought that was pretty good.
Well, and it just goes to a larger problem that, like, he's terrible at reading the crowd and reading what the match needs to be in the moment.
Right.
Like, he just can't do it for whatever reason.
Yeah, he just sticks to the plan, and that's it. Ill-advised plan.
Yeah, and the plan isn't that good. Like,
ill-advised, yes.
Yeah, he's not a – I understand what ill-advised means. he's not by any means a bad wrestler, but I find he puts together poor matches.
Yeah.
Like, he gets this credit for being a ring general, but, like, something doesn't click. It's like he's having a classic in his mind, but the match just isn't living up. Like, I mean, the Roman Reigns match at 32 is one of the clearest possible examples.
Right.
Like, it's 28 minutes of, like, of the same, like, every match he works a body part. And, like, I get that a lot of people like that on some things, but some matches aren't about that.
Right.
Like, some matches, like the Orton match at 25, like, it's insane that they were exchanging holds.
Yeah. No, I think the biggest glaring cases are those main events with the tone deaf. I mean, if you want to give them the mulligan for Jericho because they didn't know that Hogan was going to be that fucking over, you know what I mean? Like, fine. Like, all right. But to do it again with Batista, which is fine, that had to main event that Mania, I get it. There's really no other super choice. But then the other ones... 25 is one of the worst because they could have easily closed with Shawn and Taker and no one would have batted an eye. And that, to me, that's like a double whammy. Like, to not close with Shawn and Taker and then to do the match you did is like just a total just shit in the mouth. You know, 32, I get them closing. Like, what else on that card really could have closed? Were we going to really do Hell in a Cell last? I mean, I don't know if people thought at the time. But that to me was just a whiff of not reading the crowd. And especially on a show that had already been like that long. Like, I remember after the Cena thing thinking, okay, this has to be a squash. You know, they have the super long entrances. I'm like, okay, has to be a squash. And then just sit there and go through a half hour match at that point of the night was just interminable. It was awful.
You know who had the biggest balls on that night? Was Stephanie McMahon cutting that promo at 11:30.
But then at least she takes like a good shot at the end. Like, whatever. Yeah. She probably the best worker in the match on that at that time. Would you argue that Triple H's best 2 years is 2000 and then 2014?
No, 97 is probably better than 2014 for me.
Okay, and how about 04?
No.
Okay. I do think there's a lot of good in 04. I think that Hell in a Cell overshadows because the stuff with Benoit and Michaels is really good, and then all the tags, like that was the year of the Evolution tags, like those were all a lot of fun on Raw. You know, he's got all the Eugene shit kind of mucks it up. Then he kills Orton's momentum late in the year, I guess.
Yeah.
But then he has the fun match at the end of the year, too, that triple threat. Is it him, Edge, and Benoit where the title gets held up?
Yeah. Yeah, he does. Like, I think the problem is he's it's always – his feuds are always clouded by horrible stories.
Right. Or so, he has good stories that get ruined by bad blow-offs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, even the Jericho one, you can almost – not blame him because the booking was so terrible leading into it.
And the Hell in a Cell is good. Like they bring it back for that.
Yeah, I got to rewatch that one. Yeah. I remember not liking it, but I might have just been burnt out at that point. I haven't watched it in a long time. Yeah, like it's hard to get behind 04 because it's like, okay, you have a couple of really good matches, but then
yeah,
you're beating Orton in a boring match. You know, like. If it'd be one thing if there was like a justification why this guy should be the top guy.
Right.
Right? Oh, he's always putting on amazing matches, and we're constantly told he's amazing.
Right.
Which doesn't help. But like so when he doesn't back it up with the actual great match, it does sink the rest of the everything around it, I feel. So you might get a little gem here and there, but everything else feels so labored. And it's all in between these 20-minute – well, we'll get to promo. It's all in between these 20-minute promos that like meander on and on and on and just bring the show to a screeching halt. And like that's why it's hard to get behind, say like even in 2014 where he has great matches. But he does no one – I mean I guess he did the Shield some favors, but I don't think he did Daniel Bryan any favors even though he got beat by it.
Right.
I think he put – I mean, this might be writing, but I think he put him in a storyline that he could never actually come out on top of.
Right.
Like, the whole B-plus player thing, like it's – what that story needed to be in the context of what this is you're not a good enough wrestler. Because then Brian can go out and prove that he's a good enough wrestler. When you label someone a B-plus player and not marketable – like there's nothing the hero can do to overcome that.
Right. Because like, he's the boss and he's saying it.
Like, that's it. And then so he beats him and then, oh, well, there you go. That's it. You're feuding with Kane now.
Good luck. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that's why. Like, I don't think 14 is bad. It would probably be in the high end because, I mean, his worst year is what, 03?
Yeah, I'd say so.
03, 06. Pretty bad, with the exception of the Cena.
Yeah, I mean, the DX stuff is just brutal.
Yeah. I'd put 09 in there, too. I hated everything he did in 09.
Yeah, well, it's more DX shit.
Yeah.
10 Orton is where he starts the part-time thing, right, pretty much?
Yeah, and thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and even 03 sucks because of the way he handle himself on top of Raw. Like, the matches aren't terrible. I mean, like, he actually drags Nash to, like, kind of watchable stuff. You know what I mean? Like, and then the Goldberg stuff is, like, watchable, too. It's just, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Everything was just kind of a slog in 03.
But here's the thing is that, like, it's, you're right, it's nothing's bad, right? But the problem is that at that point, the promotion is being built around
matches. No, he's the epicenter. Yeah.
So, because of that, they can't be just good. Like, at Royal Rumble, he fights Scott Steiner, which is maybe the worst match he has all year, right?
Right.
But
and then he does it again.
Yeah.
No way out.
Yeah, I was there. Dad. I was there. It was in Montreal. But it doesn't help that the SmackDown title match is Chris Benoit Kurt Angle. Like, it doesn't help that the other side, the main event feuds are amazing, and his main event feuds are A, always the same, B, like, the same formula in the match, and C, like, at best – we're looking at what, like 3 stars, 3 1/4?
Right.
You know,
yeah, as they max out, right.
Right. And you can't build a promotion around that, especially over a heel. Like Hulk Hogan could get away with having 3 1/2, 3 3 3 3 1/4 matches. That'd be fine. Because he's so over that it didn't matter. But
right. And they tried to mask it with Evolution as like a horseman, but the difference is Flair was having 5-star matches and then getting help from his friends, you know, whereas Triple H wasn't getting that to that point. All right, promo in character work. I mean, we've kind of touched on it throughout here.
Yeah.
I mean, every now and then he comes into a good promo, you know, like, but there's just so many weeks of bad promos and just eating up time and doing the wrong thing, you know, not establishing his opponent as credible, instead burying him on the mic and then beating him anyway. Like, he's just too many examples of that. His DX stuff, fine, but he just always felt like the cheap shot artist in DX. Like, Shawn was the one laying in, like, the real, like, hard-hitting missiles, and, like, Triple H just felt like taking he was, like, taking cheap shots in the background, you know? And Shawn was the one, like, backing it up and, like, actually delivering the good lines, you know? Like, it felt like a lot like that. And I didn't mind him in 98 as, like, the leader of DX. I thought he was fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, my only thing is that his catchphrase is stolen.
Right.
Like, the let's get ready to suck it is, like everybody else has something somewhat original there.
Right.
And he's just ripping off Michael Buffer in the lamest possible way. I think the problem, like, I mean, the big problem I have with his character is that he doesn't know how to play a character.
Right.
Like, and I don't know if this is booking or if it's him, but he gets to be everything.
Right.
Like,
yes.
He gets to be the funny guy. He gets to be the tough guy. He gets to be the Latin guy. He gets to be every conceivable type of character.
Did you say Latin and, guy?
Yeah. Look at all the Latin writing whenever he comes out. Like, what is that?
Oh, I think they're like Latino. I guess he's salsa dancing.
But it wouldn't surprise me if suddenly he was like in Evolution. He's suddenly a ladies' man too.
Well, he kind of is. Like, they've done that before, like with DX and stuff. You know what I mean? Where like the chicks are all over him. The only thing he never does is the chicken shit heel, which is what he could have used a few times. You know, he's always outsmarting everyone,
or show a shred of vulnerability,
right? Somewhere,
like because. I think we talked at the beginning about whether he's better as a heel or a face. And I think the reason he fails as a face is because he won't – every great face has vulnerability.
Right.
On some level. Like even Austin had vulnerability on some level. This guy, it's like a – he's like a machine that nothing affects, you know? Right. And there are times where he could have turned and been an effective face, but he just wasn't willing to do the things that he needed to do it.
His big whiff was late 2000. I mean that was a time where like people were – there's two whiffs. That's one of them, right? Late 2000, where people were just begging him to have Stephanie go with Kurt and him be the face. Like, everyone wanted that to happen. And I think he could have been effective. And then the night after WrestleMania 17, not turning face and then staying with Austin was like a big, big time miss. That was, you know.
And if I could add a third to that, Evolution should have kicked him out.
Yes, yes, yep.
And he should have been the old guy.
Yes.
Like, but that would have required, and he would have been more over than any of them in the end.
Yeah, 100% true. The way they did it was terrible.
Yeah. And it showed. Like, look how long it took to rehabilitate Orton.
Yeah, it took him forever.
Like, and that's the thing with our Triple H. We joked about it before, but, like, I mean, this – regardless of backstage stuff, no one – it takes years to rehabilitate guys after they fight him. Like, it really takes years. Like, RVD, it took 4 years to get him back on top. After the feud with Triple H. CM Punk, I don't know, never reached the same height as after Triple H.
Right.
You know, there's just too many of those examples.
Yeah, I mean, O2 is just a death march on those guys.
Yeah.
Like RVD, bang. Kane, bang. Booker T, bang. Steiner, bang. You know, like Michaels even, to an extent, you know, pretty much finishes him off.
Hurts Goldberg.
Right, Goldberg, done. Orton, you know, shot. Like all these guys he just runs through. And like guys that had, you know, Jericho even, like guys that had opportunities to be stars. Like, I mean, RVD is probably the biggest one, but even Kane, like if there was ever a time where he was the most super over, it was that 0-2 stretch, you know, and then they dropped the Katie Vick stuff on him and then Triple H beats him and then like that's it.
Yeah. And I would even say that someone who he really hurt, and I kind of mentioned it before, was John Cena. I think he really hurt John Cena's career in 2006.
Yeah.
Like,
wait, so he said he sucked. You're not good enough.
Yeah. Exactly. And I mean, like we talked about the age where the old guard didn't put over the new guard, right?
Right.
But the problem with – and I mean, Triple H – this isn't a Triple H problem. It's a lot of people's problem. But one of the problems is that like now the old guard doesn't go away.
Right.
Like the old guard used to go away. Like Backlund went away and Hogan became the guy. Hogan went away. Bret Hart became the guy. Bret Hart went away. Austin.
Right. So even if you're not putting them over, you're kind of getting out of the way.
You're going, you know. But now like – not only are they staying around, but they're presented as stronger and better.
Right.
And that's never going to fly. Like, and you're never going to create – like one of the reasons why at the beginning I'm like, well, Triple H killed the business. I said that. But like they have not created a guy on the level of Austin, Rock, Hogan since Triple H became one of the faces of the company.
Right.
And as long as he's wrestling, I don't think they will. Now, that's – I don't want to – again, I'm not going to hold that against him for the list. But like But that's an issue that like they should – they'll never look at because it's him. But they got to kind of connect it a little bit because as long as like – you can be like, look how great John Cena is. But as long as, hey, but Triple H is right over here, the option is still here. You're never going to put that guy over to the next level. It's just not going to happen.
All right. Final thoughts just quickly on his work rate.
Decent work rate. Good selling for the most part. The only thing I want to mention too quickly that the fact that he brought the sledgehammer into wrestling drives me insane. And it's the worst weapon in company history. I'd rather a barbed wire baseball bat than a sledgehammer.
Right.
Because a sledgehammer destroys the believability of any match it's in. Like as soon as it comes out, I'm out of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to a hardware store and touch a sledgehammer on your head, you will have a headache. And he's hitting people in the face with them, sometimes more than once. And I just can't. Anyway, to me, there's no difference in that than a gun almost.
Right. The best use for it, which is still ridiculous, but it was for the best near fall possible, was with WrestleMania 17, where he bops, on the Taker with it.
Yes.
When he's up in the last ride. Like, to me, that's like the best use of, but even then, it probably should have been the finish, you know? That should have been it. All right. Yeah. So I agree. I mean, competent worker, the ability to be pulled up to a great match. Occasionally he can be the one leading the great match. Rarely. I think the best example of him like carrying someone is those Flair matches.
Mm.
And I know it's Flair, but Triple H really kind of led the dance in those matches. Like you could see him piecing those things together and Flair was letting him call the way. You know what I mean? Like I think those are some of his best work. Also one match we didn't mention for his great match list. It's another gimmick match, of course, but the Hell in a Cell Batista.
Very good.
Yeah. So,
and he led that too.
Yes, he did. All right. So where would you have him?
Look, I think if you're leaving him off your list, you're not really taking into account how much good stuff he has. I have him at around 40, which I think is fair for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't put him. I couldn't see him in the top 10 or top 20.
No.
Like he doesn't he's not good enough.
No.
Like and the lows are too low. But that being said, like when you start to look at the great list of guys, like not that many guys that are on the list for me, like I would say like 50% have a 4-star match. 50. That's half, right?
Right.
And then I would say maybe 20% have a 5-star match and he's got a couple of them. Right, so you got to kind of factor that in. Well, you don't. I don't want to say you got it. I said I have to. Let's put it that way. But yeah, so I got him around 40. Where would you have him?
I mean, he is like league average across the board to me. Like he's got so much good, so much bad. He's not a great wrestler, but he's not an awful wrestler. He can cut some good promos, but he cut a lot of shitty promos. Like he's even Steven to me. You know what I mean? Just like everything balances out. I probably in the 50s is my guess because like I said, like you said, he's, you know, not enough bad to drag him off the list, not enough good to drag him up the list. He's just kind of in the middle. I think almost everything just about cancels out. Like you said, for every great match he has with a guy, he has a shit match, you know, like for every, you know, good promo he cuts a bad promo. Like for every guy he helped make a little bit, he helped ruin another one, you know? So it's like, there's so much of this stuff out there that it just all washes out to me. So I just expect him to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
He's a guy that to me is going to get ranked completely by other people around him. Like I'm probably just going to put him at 50, you know, and then to say, all right, who goes up and down around him? And that's it. Just leave him there. You know, I don't feel highly enough about him to move him above people. And I don't really hate him enough to move him down below people.
Right. Yeah. Like for me, it's challenging because I really hate him.
Right.
And like he's on the list kind of begrudgingly, but I don't think my list would be fair if he wasn't. Like where would you rank him next to like someone like a Chris Benoit? Would you have Benoit ahead of him, below him?
Yeah, because I don't think Benoit has the lows he has.
Hmm.
And I think he's got just as many great matches.
Right. So you'd have him higher?
I'd have Benoit higher, yeah.
Hmm. I got him a bit lower, but yeah, like it's close. Like it's close for me.
Yeah, and yeah, I feel like he had better matches with like more variety of opponents, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, Benoit's probably got the better matches, but then Triple H, like again, it's like we keep saying, like he just everything kind of cancels itself out.
Like one of my flag bearer matches of Benoit is the match with Miz on SmackDown TV when Miz was trash, like in 06. Like
right.
Before anyone thought Miz could ever be anything, Benoit dragged him to like a pretty good match from what I remember on SmackDown in 06. And that was when it kind of like I always remember that moment. It's like, oh, maybe Miz could actually do something. Like he's out there working his ass off and Benoit's carrying him to a good match. And then even like Benoit's series with MVP is like, you know, and that's in his days where he's just is mentally gone. And he's still having like great matches, you know, good to great matches with MVP, three of them. Like, I don't picture Triple H having, like, that many good matches with MVP. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I can't see that happening, you know? So I think that's a big part of it.
People like MVP don't deserve to be in the ring with
true.
Him.
That's true. So I think it's a good place to end. Yeah. All right. It was a lot of fun, Aaron. We went much longer this time, but I think the guys we built was destined to be that way. Hopefully we'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll do a part three. We'll come up with some more guys to chat about. Be sure to take part in the project. Reach out to us on social media or, you know, via email, wherever you want to get a hold of us to join the Facebook chat. PlaceNation.com. Every day we have comments and discussion threads up. You can hop in there and talk about the project and listen to all the podcasts and podblasts and written pieces. Read the written pieces we have up as well. Stacy's been doing some really good pieces on the female candidates. And then Will doing the four-year consideration series. We have a lot of podblasts with various personalities as well. All worth checking out. They're only going to continue to churn them out. Hell, we even brought Part back. So, what do you know? There's a lot of good stuff out there. Should check it all out. And again, come back next time and maybe you'll make the cut as well. How about that, Aaron?
Love it.
Cool. Talk to you soon.
That's good.